Professor Mark Lagenfeld from Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College. He's a professor there. We're talking about the fallacy of happiness. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, before we get started, if you would like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll continue on with our conversation.
All right. Well, I'll just state my credentials. I have a doctorate in clinical psychology, and I'm currently a professor. And the other things that are involved in my life that involve happiness would be things like I very much like to garden, and gardening brings me a lot of joy. And I also volunteer. And out of all the different various volunteering, what I have found to be most joyful is feeding people. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but there's something that brings me a lot of joy in feeding people. So those are some of the things that I do.
Yeah, it's very cool because Mark and I actually volunteer together from time to time at the Damiano Center, mm-hmm. preparing food and serving people in the community, and it does bring a lot of happiness to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've experienced that myself. So the fallacy of happiness, what is the fallacy of happiness?
Well, when I say fallacy, I mean some of the misconceptions. I'm not saying that happiness doesn't exist. But the fallacies would be the misconceptions that people have and that our society tends to project onto us, really as a way of manipulating us, usually to get us to buy things. So the first happiness might be, the first fallacy, the first misconception of happiness might be that you can buy happiness. Mm-hmm. And that if you go out and purchase enough things, you'll feel better. And the reason that is often a fallacy is because it is somewhat true. Because for a while, you do feel better. Mm-hmm. And even biochemically, you know, it releases serotonin in your bloodstream when you purchase something that you want, and it gives you that little bit of a rush. But here's the thing, okay? Can we talk about the thing?
Go ahead and talk about
here's
it.
Here's the thing. You can really only buy the conditions for happiness, but you can't actually buy the happiness. For example, you might be able, if you like playing tennis, you might be able to buy a tennis racket, and that would be the conditions for playing mm-hmm. tennis, but you can't actually go to a store and buy the joy of playing tennis. You can just buy the conditions that lead up to it. Same thing with purchasing material possessions. You can buy the conditions that might lead to happiness, but it's a misconception or a fallacy if you think you can actually buy the happiness itself.
Mm-hmm. You often hear people saying, some people, that money makes you happy. You know, having a lot of money makes you happy. And then you hear others say money can't make you happy or, you know. So can you talk a little bit about money in context to happiness?
Sure. What's interesting about what you just said was they're both true to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Money can buy you happiness to a point.
Right.
But then after that, it doesn't take you any farther. Mm-hmm. And there's been so much research on this. For example, here's pretty much, I'm going to summarize the findings of these studies. They found that if you are impoverished to the point where you're not meeting your basic needs, food, shelter, medical necessities, then money can buy you happiness. Mm-hmm. However, if you already have your basic needs met, you already have a home, you already have food, you already have health insurance, if you have those basic things, more money is not going to give you a greater satisfaction in life long term. And most of the research that I've read, including watching some interviews on this, the studies have indicated actually they come close to a dollar amount. They come up with about $60,000 to $70,000 a year. For the average person, if you make less than that, mm-hmm. or even considerably less than that, then more money will buy you happiness. Mm-hmm. Because you're not really meeting your basic needs. But if your income annually is between 60, 70, that's really, in today's society, and this was a nationwide survey, that's pretty much what you need to buy your basic comforts.
Mm-hmm.
So more money on top of that, you know, you might celebrate for the day. Oh, I got a raise, you know, yes. But you're not going to need it that much. It's not going to make a difference in your comfort level. So for the long term, more money once you make between 60 to 70,000 nationwide annually, more money is not going to increase your level of happiness long term.
Mm-hmm. So can you then talk about fallacy number two?
Sure.
Happiness is completely within your control. What does that mean?
That is a misconception, and therefore I call it a fallacy, because I have read so many books where they try to make a person feel like happiness is 100% within your control. And let's just say this is not an all or none issue, all right? Happiness is somewhat within your control and somewhat not.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the research that I've read, there are some genetics that play a part. And so there's actually not just one, but there's hundreds of genes that contribute to happiness. Okay, not just one.
Hundreds.
Yeah. And the researchers estimate that roughly about 50% of your level of happiness is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not really within your control, your genetic endowment. But the good news is the other 50% is within your control. So when you read these self-help books that talk about thinking yourself happy or just think positively and the universe will provide everything for you, take that with a grain of salt, because some percentage of your happiness is within your control. But please don't think that it's 100% in your control. That is a fallacy.
Does true happiness only come with age?
Well, you're using the term true happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what's the definition of that. So many people define happiness differently. So to say true happiness coming with age, I'll say no.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say a person can experience true happiness at any age.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I was never happier than when I was in the womb, okay? And I was pretty young then. So you can experience true happiness at any age.
Sure, sure. Fallacy number three, you are to blame if you are not happy.
Yeah, that is definitely a fallacy and a misconception, because if a person buys into the mentality of fallacy number two, that you are 100% responsible for your happiness, well, then if you aren't happy, then you're to blame,
mm-hmm.
which only takes away from your happiness, makes you feel even worse. I have read some books that even go so far as to say if you have medical issues, disease, cancer, that somehow you must have sent off a negative vibe. Somehow you must have willed this to yourself, mm-hmm. and the universe was giving you what you asked for. In psychology, we call that blaming the victim. So I want to make it very clear to people out there who are suffering,
mm-hmm.
that it is not your fault if you have some illness, some sort of disease that befell you. Of course, just like we had spoken before about percentages, there is a percentage of your health that is within your control. So, I need to say that. We can do things, you know, exercise, eat right, sleep, get proper health. But this notion that if you're not happy, you're to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind that some people have a genetic predisposition for depression. Some people might have various psychological disorders that have a genetic contribution. And it's really not constructive or beneficial at all to point the finger at that person and say, it's your fault, you're not happy. There are some things within our control, but certainly there are some things outside of our control.
So earlier, or just a moment ago, you talked about health. Can happiness improve your health, in your opinion?
If we define the word happiness as being able to manage stress, then I would say yes. Most of the research studies that I've read have talked specifically about stress levels. Mm-hmm. They don't use the term happiness because it means different things to different people. And you may know that, you know, when a researcher does a study, the first thing he or she does is comes up with operational definitions
right.
for things so that everyone is on the same page.
Right.
So let's just talk in terms of managing stress. If a person is able to have a healthy level of stress, believe it or not, you don't want to be completely stress-free. Mm-hmm. You want to have a little bit of stress so that you're not bored.
Yes.
Just enough stress so that you're challenged. That can lead to happiness. And if you have too much stress to the point where your resources, and I'm talking internal resources, are depleted, then that can lead to health problems long term in any number of areas. Not necessarily overnight,
mm-hmm.
but certainly prolonged stress can damage your health. And I suppose we could think of that as unhappiness, because when someone is really stressed out, they're miserable. And there's certainly been lots of studies to support that. But those studies don't use the word happiness, so I just want to kind of clarify that.
Sure. As soon as you ask yourself, am I happy? You stop being happy.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? how did you come up with that?
That is actually a notion that has been around for a long while. It's basically saying, don't overthink it. When people ask me, are you happy? I usually say, I don't even think about it. I'm far too joyful to wonder whether or not I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, somebody will say, hey, how are you doing? And you actually tell them you're not doing so well or you're not mm-hmm. as happy. They expect you to, in many cases, to be upbeat in all of this as
yeah.
soon as they ask that question.
Yeah.
So when somebody asks, am I happy? Why do we stop being happy after that question?
Because it takes the focus off of being in the moment, doing what you're doing, and puts it on a should.
Mm-hmm.
And the should is, you should be happy.
Yes.
You should be content. And if you're not, there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when you start to self-analyze, as some people say, when you over-examine your navel, you start to think about your problems, and that takes away from your happiness.
Around the holidays, you may have bought some strange gifts.
Taxidermy bugs would be probably the strangest gift.
And so my sister-in-law thought it would be hilarious to send us like a bacon subscription.
The strangest gift I ever got was a Sex Pistols tape that my uncle got me when I was 4.
Dirt. This holiday season, consider a much more practical gift. Support Wisconsin Public Radio today. Your year-end gift makes the news, talk, and music you rely on possible, and it's tax-deductible. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your future self will thank you.
People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm here with Professor Mark Lagenfeld from Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, and we are talking about the fallacy of happiness. If you have a question or comment for Mark today, the number to call is 715-395-1790. I'm just going to ask you, is ignorance bliss in this process of being happy?
I think for some people it might be. However, usually not. Typically, you want to be informed. However, you don't want to, like, get bogged down with all the details. So you want to be informed in so much that it serves you,
mm-hmm.
in so much that it protects you, particularly from danger. However, you know, you don't want to be knowing about every misery and every misfortune in the entire world, because that's too much and you can do nothing about it. So a lot of these fallacies, a lot of these misconceptions are because people think of it as all or none, black or white, totally one way or the other, and there needs to be some middle ground. You can be bliss in a certain amount of ignorance because you don't need to be informed of every little thing going on. Mm-hmm. But if you're too ill-informed, if you're too ignorant, you watch out. You could be walking right off a cliff.
So, like a scared cat, happiness will run from you if you chase it.
Yes.
Really?
That's a metaphor that I came up with myself. Uh-huh. I didn't read that in any books. I had a cat, and I found that if I pursued the cat, it would run away. But if I sat quietly, then the cat would come to me. And it dawned on me that happiness is the same way. If you go out chasing after happiness, I'm going to get happy no matter what, I'm going to find it, you're going to chase it away. It's going to flee from you, mm-hmm. like a scared cat. Mm-hmm. It's not going to do any good. Have you ever chased a scared cat before? You're not going to catch it. Mm-mm. However, what if you just sit down? What if you take a deep breath and you relax, and in the quietness, in the stillness, the cat will come to you when it's good and ready. Happiness will come to you when you're still, mm-hmm. when you're quiet and peaceful. Happiness will come to you when it is good and ready.
So when you least expect it, that's when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Two types of happiness. You kind of alluded to some of it. Short-term and long-term. You want to?
Yeah.
Is there more you want to say about that?
Yes, and that is actually a vital point. Short-term happiness and long-term happiness are both based on emotions. Short-term happiness is based on the emotion of excitement. Long-term happiness is based on the emotion of inner peace. For example, you can go out and buy yourself a new shirt, or a new gold ring or something like that. And that gives you excitement. Maybe your favorite football team won. That gives you excitement. And you say, oh, I'm so happy. My team won. That type of excitement is a form of happiness. Please don't think that's the only type.
Mm-hmm.
Because that excitement wears off. For example, people who graduated from high school, they were excited on the day of graduation. But when you look at that diploma from high school, do you still get all excited and start dancing around? No, it wore off. Now, long-term happiness, on the other hand, based on inner peace, tranquility, that's an issue of a person's character. And you don't get that shopping in a store. You don't get that when your team wins. That sort of long-term happiness, that inner peace, comes from, like you alluded to earlier, with age.
Mm-hmm.
As you progress, as you mature, as you start to establish a firm identity, then that long-term happiness gives you a sense of purpose, and it also comes from living according to your values. When you know that you have lived a life that is right with you, not with anyone else, your values, not because someone else said should, then you have this inner sense of peace, knowing that you have lived the life that you were meant to live in accordance with your identity. That's long-term happiness.
I really appreciate that. But you know, there's so much hurt and strife, and people all over the world experiencing so much pain, even in our country. People mm-hmm. are going through so much. How can we be happy under these circumstances? Or how do we get to happiness out of all that we're going through?
That's a multifaceted question. Depending on the person's suffering, if a person is suffering because they don't think that they have enough material things, I would recommend that they take account of the good things in their life, their blessings, so to speak, and realize that they have enough.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be what they want, but they already have enough. They don't need that newer thing. If the person is suffering because of some sort of physical pain, then they might need to take measures, you know, to seek some sort of relief from that pain. Part of that might be with stress management. I should mention to you that when I was about to graduate with my doctoral degree, I did my dissertation on hypnotic pain management for people who were suffering with physical pain and could not find relief from any other traditional source. And so we used relaxation techniques, stress management techniques, guided imagery in order to help relieve that pain. So I know a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. So depending on the suffering, a lot of a person's level of happiness can be a mental mindset. Not 100%, but a lot of it can.
Sure. I want to talk, read something here and have you comment on the Happy Planet Index. The Happy Planet Index is an index of human well-being and environmental impact that was first introduced by the New Economics Foundation in July of 2006. Now, with this particular index, the United States, out of 178 countries, was 105 out of 178 countries that were surveyed in this index. Some of the smaller countries and countries that aren't as established, if you will, as the United States, like Colombia, Costa Rica, Dominica, Panama, scored the highest. Why did we score so low, I don't know, in your opinion?
I have heard that report. In fact, it's in some of the textbooks that I teach from. Mm-hmm. And some of the indicators is that in our materialistic, capitalistic society, we are conditioned, programmed, if you will, to not be satisfied, to always want to buy more. And if you think about the advertising that you see wherever, in magazines, on TV, commercials, they're constantly telling you, you're not complete unless you buy this. You're somehow lacking. You need to buy this. It's always making you feel that you are lacking something. When we get bombarded by this, it gives us, over years of conditioning, it gives us this sensation that enough is never enough. Mm-hmm. I need more, more, more. And the word more you see in the advertisement. Pay attention and look at that. Next time you see a written ad, you will see the word more in it. They're always pushing that
or
word
bigger.
More. Yeah, yeah.
Around the holidays, you may have bought some strange gifts.
So I have a friend that loves butter, and I'm giving her a book about butter.
Not really sure what she expected me to do with the card table, and that's kind of a weird gift for a 7-year-old.
I did get a pair of socks from my cousin, except it was like 4 months late, which, you know, was a bummer to get a pair of socks in April.
This holiday season, consider a much more practical gift. Support Wisconsin Public Radio today. Your tax-deductible gift makes the radio service you rely on possible. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Short-term happiness and constantly need another thrill to give us a fix of happiness, what you kind of alluded to just there, about more and bigger.
Yeah, and this ties in with, dare I say it, addiction. Whether it's shopping addiction or chemical abuse or internet addiction, gambling, any type of addiction, people want more, more, more. And typically that is short-term, because otherwise they wouldn't need more if it lasted forever. It deals a lot with the biochemical changes in our brain. You know, some people literally get a boost of serotonin when they're hitting the slot machine or when they're shopping or whatever it might be. Certainly with chemical abuse, it's the same thing. They want that feeling. They want those endorphins flowing. And that leads to short-term happiness and eventually misery. Because what happens typically with chemical abuse is they initially start off abusing the chemicals to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But then once they're addicted, they keep using the chemicals to stop from feeling bad, you see.
Yeah.
So that is a trap. Mm-hmm.
So is it selfish to try to be happier?
Well, technically, yes, because selfishness is when you focus on yourself.
Well, what's wrong with that?
I didn't say there was something wrong
okay.
with that. You know, there again, if there's one theme today, it's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be selfish to a certain degree. We need to focus on ourselves to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we neglect ourselves.
Right.
And if you neglect your own needs, you're not good for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are around you, coworkers and whatnot, they are happier when you're happy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take care of yourself to a certain degree, you're actually boosting the level of happiness of those around you, including your family members.
That's very good. Volunteering. Lose yourself in the service of others.
Yeah.
Talk about that some more.
Well, I want to cite the source there. I believe Gandhi said that. Lose yourself in the service of others. I've done it. I've been there. Mm-hmm. I can testify.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's the other degree, the flip side of selfishness. You need to have a little bit of selfishness, but you also need to be able to be selfless. And when I serve other people, it lifts my spirits. Talk about a serotonin boost.
Yeah.
It helps me to help others. And it doesn't always have to be a grand production. It doesn't always have to be a big thing, donating a lot of money or spending, you know, an entire year in some third world country, you know, helping people who are in dire straits. It can be as simple as holding the door open for someone. What I personally try to do, I try to give one compliment to a person every day, at least one compliment. Those simple things, you're serving others. What can I do for you?
Mm-hmm.
How can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
In that way, that contributes, I believe, to at least my long-term happiness. You know, everyone's an individual. When I was dealing with people who were suffering from mental illness, when I was working as a therapist, because I didn't always work as a professor, I found that to get them up and out of the house and volunteering at other places, even in a support group where they could give suggestions and helpful comments to each other, boosted their level of happiness as well. So there needs to be a balance of taking care of yourself selfishly and also taking care of others as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly doesn't hurt to give a little bit of courtesy when you're driving. Let someone in. You know, go ahead and be a courteous driver. Something as simple as that. You're sort of paying forward the kindness.
Mm-hmm. And the volunteering piece it's very important. And I just wanted to say to folks of color primarily in this area, please get involved. You know, other folks who are listening too, please get involved in the nonprofit or organization of your choice, because it really will make you happy. Because you're giving of yourself so selflessly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so vitally important. There is this happiness being a byproduct of living in harmony with your values.
Right.
Can you talk about values and the aspect that values have on happiness?
Sure. The fact that that happiness is a byproduct shows that happiness, like that scared cat, runs from you if you pursue it directly. So I encourage people, do not fall victim to this fallacy, this misconception that you can find happiness if you make that your one goal for the day and you go for it and you better get out of my way because I'm trying to be happy today. Yeah, it's a byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness just comes along. Typically, it comes along when you realize that you have lived in harmony with your values. And let me just say, it's up to you to decide your values. Don't let anyone else tell you. It's not my job to tell you. It's not society's job to tell you. You decide what your values are. You decide who you were born to be, and be that person. And then happiness will just come along as a byproduct.
When you put others down, when we put others down, we take away from our very own happiness. Talk mm-hmm. about that, please.
Putting others down to get happy is a huge fallacy, a huge misconception. We see this, I'm going to be stereotyping here and say, we see this particularly amongst the immature. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. Someone, regardless of their age, someone who is immature thinks that he or she can make themselves happy by putting someone else down. If I insult you, if I say something negative about this person or that group, that somehow it exalts me. Mm-hmm. And aren't I better now because I put someone else or some other group down? That's a fallacy. Here's why. Because we are all interconnected.
Yes.
We are all humans.
Absolutely.
There is only one true race, and that's the human race. Mm-hmm. And we're all members of it. So when you put other people down, you're putting people down who are members of your human race, your international family. And the other thing is, when you put someone else down, even if it's a slight, even if it's a little thing, guess what you're doing? You're creating a distance between you and that person. Let's say you don't like a cashier or something, and you, even in just in your mind, you think a negative thought about that person. You're creating a distance between you and that person. Guess what that contributes to? Loneliness. Mm-hmm. The more you judge others, the more lonely you become because you're pushing people away.
So you talk about the human race and that we're all a part of the human race, and but we have been accustomed to putting people down, as we're talking about, but always having this notion of a hierarchy. This group is better than this group, and this group is better than this group, until it goes from top to bottom. One group is saying they're better than the other, constantly keeping us separate as people. As mm-hmm. the human race, how do we fix that?
I would say mentally, we need an attitude adjustment. And hopefully people can accept that, take it on as a challenge within themselves, not look outside. Don't look to the president to do it. Don't look to your boss to do it. Within yourself, we need to adjust our attitudes. Start viewing everyone as your brother or sister.
Okay. Welcome back, folks, to the conversation that to be having with Professor Mark Lagenfeld from Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College here in Superior. You know, I was just thinking, you know, as I walk downtown in downtown Duluth, I see so many people every day when I'm downtown, and the looks on some of their faces, the hate, the hurt, because there are some people that have a lot of hate. They don't like certain groups, okay? But there are a lot of people that are hurting also, because you can see it, you mm-hmm. can feel it. And I've experienced it so many times when I've gone downtown. And I often wonder what's keeping them from being happy. You know, can you talk about some of that and some of those dynamics that we see in our communities across the country?
Sure. As you were saying that, I pictured a metaphor in my head that I have heard many times before, and that's dealing with arrows that are shot at you.
Yes.
When someone shoots an insult or some injury at you, that's the first arrow. Mm-hmm. But then the arrows that follow tend to be from ourselves. The bitterness, the anger, the hate that you describe,
mm-hmm.
the resentment.
Yes.
And so you have to ask yourself, how many times am I going to shoot myself with these arrows. I understand that the first arrow came from that other person. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was not within my control. I acknowledge that. But how many times am I going to beat myself up over this with hanging on to the bitterness and hating that person? And that's what you can see in their face. And if they were to literally turn that frown upside down and smile, they would send a signal to their brain that would improve their mood. And yes, there were studies that were done on that. University of California in San Francisco, they took people who were suffering from depression and they had them smile for like 10 minutes mm-hmm. and they found that it improved their mood. I want to clarify by saying it did not cure them.
Sure.
It did not totally take away their depression. Please don't misunderstand me. However, it did improve their mood, in part because when you hold a smile, you're sending a signal to your brain, and your brain responds to that. Likewise, if you frown and you hold that frown, after several minutes, you start feeling a little bit lower, a little bit more mm-hmm. down. In the textbook that I teach from, they have us do that with a pencil. They'll say, put a pencil in your mouth and hold it with your teeth. That causes you to smile and notice how you feel. Mm-hmm. And then they say, hold the pencil in your mouth with your lips so that mm-hmm. the corners of your mouth go down mm-hmm. and notice how you feel. And sure enough, the students typically start to feel a little bit down just holding that frown. So when you see those angry faces on the street, you know, if they were to take more control of their own expression, mm-hmm. their own countenance, if you will, they could change their facial expression, change their thoughts, and somewhat improve their mood. I don't think it would totally make them completely blissfully happy, but it would at least improve their mood.
Mm-hmm. This is a very educational conversation. I want you to talk about the Lincoln quote. Mm-hmm. Most folks are just about as happy as they make up their minds to be. Happiness is within. It is not a matter of externals.
Right. Yeah, that's a famous quote from Lincoln. And he's talking about, really, attitudes, I think. People can make up their mind, you know what, I'm going to be happy today, no matter what. And quite frankly, that's my attitude. No matter what happens to me today, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to find something positive in it. That doesn't mean that I'm going to ignore the negative. That doesn't mean that I'm going to stop paying my bills. But I make up my mind, I'm going to find the advantage in everything, the opportunity in everything. And so when Lincoln talks about, you know, happiness is internal and not outside of yourself, it basically means no one outside of you can force you to be happy or force you to be unhappy. And I've heard people say this. I've heard a married woman say, it's my husband's job to make me happy. Well, no, he can't. Okay, that's in your head. You have to make yourself happy. Likewise, no one can make you unhappy. And to give evidence of that, I reference Dr. Frankl's book, Viktor Frankl, mm-hmm. who wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. He was in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany as a Jewish man.
Mm-hmm.
And he made up his mind to be happy mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. a concentration camp. And what he said in his book was, the Nazis took away everything from me except one thing, my attitude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he made up his mind to be happy regardless. That was the one and only thing he really had control over, was his attitude. Well, if he can be happy in a Nazi concentration camp, what excuse do the rest of us have?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you hear folks oftentimes say happy people are annoying. They're stupid. Why are they so happy? What do they have to be happy? Why would they say something like that? You know, happy people are annoying and stupid. Are they?
I think that if a person is suffering and, let's just say, depressed, they don't want to be reminded that someone else is happier. This deals with what you referred to earlier before the break about the hierarchy in our society, mm-hmm. and someone has to be on top, someone has to be on the bottom. It's competition,
mm-hmm.
and that social class.
Right.
And so the competition is, well, I'm not feeling very happy today, and if you are, well, in comparison, I don't really measure up. And it, for those people who view everyone as competition, then they're going to be annoyed that you're happier than they are, as opposed to someone who had a more positive attitude who would be happy that you're happy. You know, I am pleased that you are happy. I share your joy.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very interesting. Now, I wonder, Professor Lagenfeld, though, if... I don't know if I call it poison or if it is poison, when somebody walks in the room and they're the only down person mm-hmm. in the room. As soon as they walk in, they cause everybody else to come into that same place they're at. I've seen it many, many times. As a professor of psychology, how do you deal with something like that when there can be 20 people in the room and that one person will come in and mm-hmm. they have this very negative, poisonous attitude and they bring everybody down?
Yeah. Emotions are contagious. I used to have a bumper sticker that said that. When someone's negative energy is affecting other people, here's what I recommend, and I try to do this myself. When you, first of all, are aware of it, okay? Because those other people who have their happiness taken away by that person's negative attitude, they may not even be aware that's what's happening. So the very first step is be aware that this individual's negative attitude, his or her pessimism, is affecting me. Once you're aware of that, what you can do is show compassion to that person. And I'll give you a real simple way to do it. In one breath, breathe in mm-hmm. love from the universe. And when you exhale, breathe out compassion to that person. They don't even need to know you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You just breathe in love and breathe out compassion and send your breath to that person. When that happens, when you introduce compassion into the environment, you're counteracting their negative energy. Your compassion, once you are aware, can override their negativism.
Mm-hmm.
Consider this. According to theology, hell is a place without compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Some people work in a hellacious environment. All it takes is one person to introduce compassion to that environment, and it is no longer hell.
Very, very interesting. I want to take this time, we're going to end on that, to thank Professor Mark Lagenfeld from the Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College here in Superior for being on the program today. We're going to close with Pharrell Williams and Happy. Thank you all for being on People of Color with Henry Banks on Wisconsin Public Radio. Have a good night.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
You've been...
The holiday season can be full of fun traditions.
Yeah, I guess one of our biggest traditions is keeping the Halloween candy bowl full as absolutely as long as possible.
We used to actually wear ties that had belonged to my grandfather. So there's year after year of pictures of us all wearing these crazy ties, including our dogs.
We get the entire family together, sometimes three generations of family, and we bike along the Missouri River. A wonderful thing I look forward to every year. That and ping pong against my grandpa.
Start a new holiday tradition. Make your year-end gift to WPR today. Your support is tax deductible and it makes the programming you rely on possible. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.